You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The heroine of Peter Heller's latest novel is Celine Watkins, an elegant, enigmatic, independently wealthy 68-year-old private eye whose specialty is helping clients find long-lost family members. When the book opens, she accepts a case brought to her by Gabriella Lamont, a young woman whose father, a nature photographer, had apparently been killed by a grizzly bear just outside of Yellowstone Park 20 years earlier. Celine is Mr. Heller's third novel, but before he began writing fiction, he was known for his award-winning adventure writing, published in Outside Magazine, National Geographic Adventure, Men's Journal, as well as his four books of nonfiction and his regular contributions to NPR. I spoke with him this past March, and we are replaying that interview for you now. Peter Heller lives in Denver, and considering all of his writing about the American Southwest, I began by asking him why he set this book in Brooklyn Heights a year after the collapse of the World Trade Center towers in 9/11.
The book, after I started writing it, I realized pretty quickly that the book was about my mom. And
she was a private eye.
She was a private eye, and she died 2.5 years ago. And I think I wanted to write the book to spend another year with her. I was really close with her, and she lives. Her husband still does, right at the base of the Brooklyn Bridge, sort of kitty corner to the River Cafe there on the Brooklyn side of the East River. And I grew up in Brooklyn Heights. I don't tell, I'm sort of known as a Western writer, and I don't tell too many, people from Colorado and Wyoming that I grew up in Brooklyn, but I did. I know the subway lines. So I had to start it with, where she lived.
Do your mother and Celine have anything else in common except their occupations?
All the backstory and the family history is pretty much true. My mom, she grew up in Paris. Her dad was a banker for Morgan's, and he was in the Paris office as the war was raging. And as the Germans got closer and closer to Paris, his wife and her three little daughters fled. And then a few months later, as the Nazis were marching into Paris, so did Harry Watkins, my grandfather. But so my mom, who is Carolyn Watkins, I changed her name, she got to Manhattan when she was 7, couldn't speak any English. And my grandmother told me that all she wanted to do was be in the French Resistance. That's what she wanted. And she spent all her time in Manhattan listening, going up to groups of people, listening to them talk and trying to figure out who was a Nazi spy. And so she kind of grew up wanting to be James Bond. And that led to this this pursuit of, private investigation.
It is ironic that probably the greatest writer in France at that time of the Nazi invasion was a man named Louis Ferdinand Céline.
Yeah.
But he was a Nazi sympathizer.
Yeah.
Writers sometimes tell me that characters that they've created hang around after a novel is finished. Well, since this is based on your mother, has that been the case?
You
still hear her voice or wonder what she'd
do
if a new situation arose?
Yeah, I do, actually. And I think how much fun it would be to go with her on another case. I sort of grew up when she got married, like a lot of people in her generation. She went to college and got married pretty quickly after college. And then she had me. And I think I kind of, quashed her dreams of joining the CIA or whatever she was going to do. But as I came up and my little sisters got, more independent, she started working for a detective agency. And she got her PI license. And pretty quickly after that, she was contacted by the FBI to work on a case. And I can tell you about that if you like.
But go ahead.
They were trying to catch a guy who perpetrated a rather large fraud on the Bank of New York. And they thought he might be living in the environs of his family in Southern Connecticut. And they didn't have an agent. They wanted an agent that could go and mingle with this sort of social register set around, old Greenwich. They thought that's where he was from. And so they contacted my mom, and she made a few phone calls. She found out where she thought he lived and went up there in her old Volvo. She got to this horse property outside of Greenwich, Picture white rail fences, this, you know, nice big clapboard house. And she spied on the guy with her opera glasses. No joke. And he came out finally, kind of a sad-looking middle-aged guy, got in a sports coupe. And she started following him in her Volvo. And they had this car chase through Southern Connecticut, this high-speed car chase.
Oh, he was aware that she was following
him. Yeah, and I can see, you know, I can see them, you know, chasing through Darien at 40 miles an hour. You know, probably that's what it was. But anyway, finally he got so intrigued. He was like, who is this little woman who can barely see over the steering wheel, you know, following me? And he pulled over. She got out of her car. Clack, clack, clack. Here come the pumps, you know, jingle, jingle of the bracelets. She said, Franklin, what you're doing is wrong, and it's not good for you. It's not good for your family. We've got to make this right. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to follow to your house, and we'll drive together down to the Bank of New York, and we'll settle this thing. And he did. You know, her moral authority was so persuasive, something that, you know, I experienced a lot growing up, that she followed it. They went down. And she never did a perp case again because she said his face, when they put the cuffs on him was something she never wanted to see again.
Your Celine is not in very good health. How many years do you imagine that she's got left? She has emphysema from a 4-pack-a-day smoking habit, and she even has to use an oxygen tank sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that was my mom, and mom lived until she was 80, which is amazing because she had emphysema ever since she was about in her 50s. But she was so spirited. And, you know, she and her husband, Pete, worked on cases up until 2 years before she died.
This is not like your previous novels. This is your first mystery. Did you enjoy writing in the genre?
Yeah, I really did. I love taking genres and seeing what I can do with them and if I can do anything fresh.
So really no fun. More apocalyptic novels?
I'm not saying that. I think we're in apocalyptic times, don't you? we're going to need more of those, I think.
You also write poetry.
Yeah.
Celine's husband, Peter, is a wonderful character, but you gave him your own first name.
Well, he actually exists too. He's my mom's husband. I hate to say this is, you know, this is all true because it's really not. I mean, it's based on real people. I don't change Pete's name. His name is Pete Beveridge. He still lives in the apartment. He is a crack investigator, just like my mother. And he's a very different kind of dude. He is a seventh generation Maine Islander. And so he grew up being able to build a small boat and pitch hay and stuff like that.
And he's happy playing a supporting role their lives together. He does the shopping, the cooking, a lot of work on her cases. He's kind of like the Watson to her Sherlock Holmes.
Right, yeah, he is. And they're kind of like good cop, bad cop, or maybe the cop who doesn't say anything and then the one who talks. Because Pete is, the rest of the family calls him the quiet American, and he really doesn't say much.
My guest is Peter Heller, whose latest novel is called Celine. And one of the several surprising things about Celine is how much she knows about guns, especially considering her age and upbringing. She's also a terrific markswoman. We never find out exactly how she learned all of that.
Right. And I wanted to leave gaps in her life so that
even her husband doesn't know.
Right. And I wanted to leave those sort of mysterious gaps in her life where she had training that nobody really knows about so that maybe we could come back and write another one. But I can tell you a quick story about, I wasn't aware that she was a crack shot, and we were in Idaho. My mother and I went to visit her sister who was dying. And we were both very sad, and we were driving through a town called Haley, Idaho, and Mom said, hey, pull over. It was a gun shop. It said Roop's Discount Guns. We pulled over. She walked in. She was wearing a scarf, her pumps, and, you know, very elegant. And this guy was cleaning a handgun on the counter. And he kind of looked up. He was wearing coveralls. He looked up and he was like, very curious. She came to the counter. She started looking at the handgun. She said, can I see that one? And he's like, is this a gift? She's like, no, it's for me. Well, that Navy Colt 45 is a little bit big for you. You might want to start with the 22. She gave him a little bit of an arch, you know, eyebrow raise. And she took the gun. made a stance towards the wall, and I could sort of see the bubble over the guy's head, you know, wow, she must watch a lot of cop shows, pretty good stance. And then he got so intrigued, he said, I was about to close up. Let's go shoot this thing. And we got into Dick Roop's Bronco and went up to a gully. The guy was very patronizing. He set up cans of bottles on a log, and he was showing her how to rack the gun. And then she, you know, was very patient. And she picked up this gun, and she just went bam, 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 bam. And all the bottles and cans went flying. And you could have not characterized this guy's face. I mean, Norman Rockwell would not have done it justice. It was, and me too. I didn't know she could shoot like that. So interesting having a mother that always surprised you that way.
Well, Celine obviously is the model here, but this case that you have with Gabriella coming to her because she's not convinced that her father is dead because his body was never found, that is the fictional part of this?
Yeah.
You shifted from writing nonfiction to writing fiction when you were in your 50s. Had you always wanted to write fiction?
Yeah, I wanted to write fiction since I was like 11, since my
life. What took you so long then?
I had to make a living, you know. When I went to a good college, I studied literature, you know, I did everything you could, you know, do to be a great novelist and a poet. And I got out of college, and you know, the English department didn't tell me that you can't make a living being a poet. And I think they should have probably. So I started writing for magazines, and that led to a joyful diversion as an adventure writer.
You once told an interviewer that you began writing fiction because you no longer wanted to know how the books would end.
Yeah, all the books I'd written before were nonfiction adventure environmental books. And, of course, I always knew the ending because they happened. And so I don't, you know, I don't plot, I don't outline. I just show up at the coffee shop and I start with the first line. And it's always about the music of the language, you know, that brings me into the story.
And how far into the book did you kind of know where it was going to go?
You know, the whole beginning was about this woman, Gabriella. I had heard a story once about a little girl who lived in her own apartment when she was 7. And that intrigued me. And the first line I wrote was something like, my mother's name was Amana Ambrosio. Amana means night rain. And that's what started the book. And so I began the novels writing about this little girl who lived on her own. And then for some reason, she went and contacted someone who was a lot like my mom.
And then it took off.
Yeah.
And you've said that you've adopted Graham Greene's method of writing. What do you mean by that?
Well, he wrote 500 words a day every single day of his life, and he kept a subtotal in the margin of a notebook and stopped at word 500, even in the middle of a sentence, in the middle of dialogue, in the middle of a love scene, in End of the Affair, he would stop. And I realized when I read that what he was doing was stopping in the middle. So I always write my 1,000 words a day, but I always stop right in the middle of a scene so that I can't wait to get up again in the morning and finish it.
And figure out what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
He also moved around with genres.
He did. He's very underrated, I think, don't you? I mean, I think he's just
he was once considered one of the great writers in the world.
And no one talks about him anymore. He's just, he's one of my favorites. I love Graham Greene, yeah.
So I suspect you're going to want to return to Celine as a character somewhere down the line.
I would imagine, yeah.
But not immediately?
No, I think it would be good cross training, you know, write a, you know, another novel and then come back to a Celine Watkins mystery. People are already asking about it.
I hope her oxygen tank is filled.
Yeah, exactly.
Celine was chosen by Entertainment Weekly as one of the top 10 books and most anticipated books of 2017, and by the independent booksellers across the country as an indie next great read. It is published by Knopf, and my great thanks to Peter Heller for stopping by to talk about it.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Leonard.